Okay, reading from Chai the Dharma, Chapter 8. Om Gyanatimurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Daksuranmulitam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha Sri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sapitam Yena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Vidati Sapadantikam Vancha Kopa Tarubhyascha Kripa Shindu Bhayebhacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadha Srivastade Gaur Bhaktavinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So greetings from Vrindavan. Such a I just can't describe how spiritual this place is. It's very, very intense also. But how spiritual the place is. It's just remarkable. Even when Arjun came in to visit me, I'm giving class already every day. The softness and the fragrance of the flowers, it's just inconceivable how sensually we are deprived in the West of even, not in the West, but at least in New York, of such natural, beautiful things. And, you know, it's just the whole atmosphere, it's just moving so intensely towards Krishna. It's so thick. The bhakti is almost thick in the air and breathing it. And that's intense because bhakti means it's not about you. And we generally live our lives and our anxieties, ambitions, and fears centered around ourselves. So it's just an amazing thing. And I'm already hosting 15 Russian people from a tour and giving them class once or twice a day. So even the service hasn't stopped. And that's also the mood of Vrindavan, is just to flow with the will of God. And if you don't, you're moving upstream. And it becomes very, very difficult to stay here. But if you go, if you actually surrender, and it's so difficult because we're so resistant, because God's will may not be consistent with our own attachments, our conceptions, our ideas. But, you know, it's kind of hot here, not torturously hot, but enough hot where you're kind of a little lethargic, a little bit slowed down. And it's almost, that's also kind of spiritual. You can't plow through things here. You have to kind of move on a different kind of pace. And just to visit the saintly people, yesterday I spent about an hour and a half or two with Puri John Prabhu. And just the question, you know, advancement in spiritual life, changing your internal sense. And despite all your samskaras and your anarthas and everything you have for, you know, generation after life after life, and the only way to do it is to always have Krishna, this was his point, and I appreciate it, in the focus of your consciousness. And that's bhakti. And that's the only way to have it. And anyway, I'm just appreciating it. Today I'll go to the flower fields and we'll go see the saintly people that make the flowers of Vrindavan, and it's just a blessing. It's a blessing, and I practically haven't left my room yet. Of course, I'm staying in MVT, which is a beautiful gated community next to the temple. It's one of the centers of the activities here. And I was here when this place was purchased. You know, now it's such a beautiful place, and so many people I know are already visiting me, and it's just great. So now let's get to Jiva Dharma, and I think it's really getting interesting now. You know, because we're brought into the lives of these Paramahamsa Babaji's. Babaji's means respectable person. It's usually given to a person who's able to sit down in one place and chant Hare Krishna and give himself to Krishna. And it's a story about those people, the generation after Lord Chaitanya. And in the particular section we are, these Babaji's that we're following, Vaishnav Das Babaji and Paramahamsa Das Babaji, they're visiting some other place where there's an assembly of Babaji's or respectable people of also different levels. And their ashram is centered on a place where Nittaivat, where Lord Chaitanya sat. And one of the Babaji's asked in the assembly, a third group of people came, and they asked, what is Vaishnav behavior? And somehow or other, out of humility, even the topmost of the saint, he's Haridas Baba, he's 100 years old. He doesn't really even want to speak. Humility is so natural. We're reading just yesterday the story of Shivananda Sen. And he has the responsibility of bringing the Vaishnavas to see Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Jagannath Puri. And a dog joins the party, and somehow they forget to feed the dog, and the dog is lost, and he's just brokenhearted because he can't meet his responsibilities. And then later, he sees the dog with Lord Chaitanya. He pays his obeisances. You know, it's so much from the heart of a Vaishnava to be overwhelmed either with the sweetness or glory of Krishna. Either the sweetness, there's two types of greatness, sweetness, person's personality, and aishwarya, person's position. And Krishna's personality, Krishna's position, which is always in the forefront of a Vaishnava's consciousness, is just overwhelming. So you're always feeling in this sheltered, dependent, humble position, and that becomes the lens by which you see everything and which you see others even. We're going to talk about that today. When a Vaishnava is free from responsibilities and is free to just see through the happy position of the heart what he actually sees. He actually sees that everyone is serving Krishna and Krishna is loving everyone. Objectivity is not always the highest position. Like a mother's love for her child is not objective. But it's somehow a higher position than the intellectual objective position of analyzing what is a person's strength, what is a person's weaknesses, knowing them exactly rather than loving them fully. But that's a position that's extremely rare. And even if you have that position, to be able to live in that way as your service for Krishna requires a certain type of seclusion that is not usually afforded a Vaishnava in this world. So anyway, let's get back here. So what happens is Vaishnava Das Babaji is answering the question by explaining that there are three levels of Vaishnava and they exhibit different types of behavior. And they're only qualified to exhibit different types of behavior. And the Kanishta Adhikari, which is not a small thing either. Kanishta Adhikari is not a small thing either because he's pious enough to approach God and develop the sense that the goal of life is to surrender to God. It's just that he doesn't have a high degree of knowledge of the Shastra, so he doesn't know what to do. And his faith is not so mature, so he can become confused and unsteady by different circumstances in life, by different conceptions that he meets. And his basic faith in God is in the deity. Krishna is there. He doesn't so much, and he doesn't know how to behave. In other words, he doesn't know how to behave with others. But somehow or other he approaches God. He sees God in the form of the deity, but he doesn't know how to deal with others. And we describe the hypocrisy of that in one sense. You know, I'm reading two different books who have the same subject about Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttam, and they discuss them in different ways because they're generic terms. Because it means Kanishta, beginning Adhikari. So I was just kind of going between the two books because I'm teaching to the Iranians the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and we're discussing that. So this is more the consciousness of one and his qualification for practicing pure devotional service. So the consciousness of one, and therefore your behavior is based on your consciousness, you only see God in the deity. And that's a type of hypocrisy because, and as Gail wrote me the question, you know, the deity is where Krishna manifests. So Krishna can also manifest in a person. And the degree to the person's level of purity is the degree that he can actually manifest Krishna and therefore become a receptacle for God. But anyway, God is in everyone's heart. And because God's in everyone's heart,
especially the advanced devotees, the pure devotees, you can also see God in their heart, and therefore you pay obeisances to them. And they humbly don't accept it on behalf of their bodily shell, but on behalf of God within their heart, which they're meditating on. But anyway, to see God, you know, I saw this commentary by a very learned Vaishnava, where he said, you know, to be nice to someone publicly and then nasty to them privately doesn't indicate a very high level of love for them. So if you worship Krishna and the deity publicly, but privately, in one sense, when in someone's heart, you're disrespecting them, or you don't see that, or you don't understand that, it's not a very high level. But that's basically the behavior of a Kanishtha Adhikari, is he respects God. And he respects God in the form of the deity, and he's limited to see God in that manifestation. Then the Madhyama Adhikari, his consciousness elevates, which is a very high thing, and actually even in this discussion, he has four types of relationships, behavior. When he sees God, he worships God, and also the pure devotee. And you know, when he sees the devotees in general, he's friendly. When he sees those who are innocent, they don't know, he's compassionate. And he neglects those. He neglects those who are inimical, not wanting to increase their offenses. And of course, that neglect indicates in where you share your heart intimately about deep in your spiritual heart, your spiritual conceptions. In other words, if you have deep feelings about Krishna and someone is innocent, you can share them. But if they're inimical, you'll just increase their enmity. But it doesn't mean you don't deal with those people. They may be your relatives, they may be, you know, business associates, etc. It doesn't mean you don't deal with them. It doesn't mean you're not nice to them, but you don't reveal your heart to them. You kind of avoid discussion with them. And we avoid opening your heart, which is bhakti, which is Krishna. So it's a little bit, of course, and there's degrees of their enmity. And if their enmity is aggressive, then they're avoided completely, no matter who they are. So your degree of enmity, your degree of friendship, your degree of worship, and your degree of compassion depends on the qualities and of the other person. And a Madhyama Adhikari considers all these things. The extent which he neglects those who are inimical depends on their degree of enmity. And while he's explaining this, one of the residents of the places they're visiting interrupts and said, "What is the behavior of Uttama Adhikari?" And Babaji Mahasai becomes startled, and he chastises him. And he chastises him because, and I've seen this, when you're making a point, it's a very subtle thing, even giving a class, It takes a very high degree of concentration, depending on your degree of frame of reference. And an argument, because the question is answered. So you're building up the answer to according to the person's frame of reference. And therefore, you have to establish certain facts and, you know, understand the person's doubts. And it's a very subtle process. And if someone just interrupts you, you know, it's very difficult sometimes to actually go back and develop that train of thought. She says, I'm an old man and my memory's fading. The subject matter changes too abruptly. I will forget what I'm going to say. And you know, Babaji was strict, but he never found fault with anyone. But he's quick to respond if someone spoke inappropriately. It is his duty. Anyway, people were, you know, a little stunned because when someone is of that stature and he gets upset, you know there's a reason. And so Babaji now is going to complain, not complain, he's going to develop his train of thought. When this Madhyam Vaishnav, it means the middle level, when he progresses beyond the stage of sadhana bhava, there's three stages of practicing bhakti. One is sadhana bhakti, and then there's sadhya bhakti. There's the practice and there's the goal. So generally there's two stages, but we say there's three stages because there's the goal, but not the perfectional goal. Our goal is bhava. Our goal is our eternal relationship with Krishna. Our goal is a sentiment and love for Krishna. But that sentiment or love for Krishna it's called Prem Ankur. It's called Prem Ankur. Prem Ankur means it's just a sprout. But it's the goal. It's not the difference between bhava and prema. Prema, the highest form of love. It's the difference between the sun rays and the sun. They're the same thing. They're heat and light, but one has density and one has laxity. And bhava is still suffering from the traces of previous Vaishnav aparad. So it's a perfectional state because it's the descent of God's cognitive and pleasure potencies, the understanding of God and the love of God and the understanding of the relationship with God. That's a big moment. That's like the goal of spiritual practice, and it's really powerful. But it's still something further to go, and you have to practice more, actually. But it's not practice, because you've actually achieved this goal. The goal is to get frame, and there you have the sprout. It's growing. You never had that before. You had just a seed. But now it's sprouted. It's a huge moment. But you go beyond that. And when the Madhyam practices beyond the stages of sadhana bhava, now here again, when they're discussing Madhyam here, they're not just discussing it in relationship to your qualification to practice Vaidhi Bhakti. They're talking about it in terms of your consciousness. And when they talk about Madhyam in terms of your consciousness, it's everything below Uttam, below the perfectional stage. It's not a simple thing. And when it comes to the level of prema, it becomes highly condensed. There's nothing else in the consciousness of prema. It becomes so thick. Sometimes it's so thick, you're not even cognizant in your meditations of anything existing outside of your meditation. And those symptoms are described in the Srimad Bhagavatam 11.2.25 as follows: Sarva Bhuteshu Yapashye Bhagavad Bhavam Atmana. One who sees his own Bhagavad Bhavam, he sees his own ecstatic mood of love to Krishna in the hearts of all jivas, Sarva Bhuteshu, and sees all beings within Bhagavan as an Uttama Bhagavan. So he's seeing completely through this heart of love, because that's all that's in his consciousness. It's so condensed, it's so thick, his love for Krishna, that that's his lens. So when you have that lens, and again, you're in a position, you're in the rare position to have that consciousness, and the rare position to live in that consciousness. A preacher cannot live in that consciousness, because then he can't instruct people, he can't make distinctions. So it's said that there are people who are Uttama Bhagavats, who have enough cognizance in their prema bhakti to say, I have to come to a more discriminatory platform. I can't just look at the world through my heart and through my love. Otherwise, I can't instruct anybody and I can't do my service. I have to come down to the platform of Madhya. And so here's what he sees. He perceives that all living beings love Krishna in his feelings of love that he cherishes. He just sees everybody loving Krishna in a very intense way. And he also perceives that God is therefore loving everyone in the same way. And he has no other disposition than this mood of love. And then he goes on, because Bhaktivinoda Thakur is writing this novel, he has such an analytical mind, so he knows how the modern mind will misunderstand things. So then one misunderstanding is, we see that sometimes pure devotees have other moods. Like Sukadeva Goswami was a Uttama Bhagavat, but he described Kamsa as Bhoja Tamsula, a disgrace to the Bhoja dynasty. And it's very heavy how he describes Kamsa in the Bhagavatam. So here, someone's going to raise the question, the Gales of the world, they're going to raise the question that, what in the Bhagavatam, here's Sukadeva, he's an Uttama Bhagavat, and he's getting so heavy. Why is he getting so heavy? And so this Vaishnav Babajan, so these are like, they're Uttama Adhikars, they know the Shastra also. So he explains that it seems that it's spoken out of enmity towards Kamsa, but actually it's a manifestation of prema towards Krishna. That's his prema towards Krishna. And therefore, the prema towards Krishna criticizes Kamsa. He's trying to kill Krishna. That's also a manifestation of love. He says, when Shuddha prema, when pure love becomes the life of a Bhagavat, life of the devotee, it's known as Uttama Bhagavat. In this condition, there is no longer any distinction between love, friendship, mercy, and neglect, as in the Madhyama Adhikara. He doesn't make a distinction. Neglect this, friend. He's like everyone he sees as loving Krishna and Krishna loving them. All his behavior becomes a manifestation of prema. It's all love. And there is no difference in his eyes between a Kanishtha, Madhyama Uttam, nor any difference between Vaishnava and non-Vaishnava. Advanced condition is very rare. His lens is just, he's living in that world of love, and that's his lens. And and he's answering that person's question. Just consider now that a Kanishtha Adhikari, right, a Vaishnava, he doesn't render service to the Vaishnavas. He's only worshiping the deity. And an Uttama does not make any distinction between Vaishnavas and non-Vaishnavas. He sees all jivas as servants of Krishna. So the Kanishtha only sees Krishna in the deity, and the Uttama, he only sees Krishna in the deity, and the Uttama does not make any distinctions at all. So that's the variance. He only sees the Krishna in the deity, not in any place else. And he doesn't make distinctions between anyone. This means that only the Madhyam, the middle Vaishnava, offers respects to the Vaishnavas and renders service to them. It's non-Vaishnava, Vaishnava, Uttama Adhikari, he's like seeing everyone. So it's only the Madhyam who actually can distinguish that this is the devotee of Krishna and actually renders service to them. And he serves three kinds of Vaishnavas: one who chants Krishna Nam even once, those who chant the name constantly, and those whose mere sight automatically causes Krishna Nam to dance on the tongue. The three types of Vaishnavas that from Kulaniya Gram. A Vaishnava may be considered a Vaishnava, a superior Vaishnava, or a superlative Vaishnava according to his degree of advancement. A Madhyam Bhakta should serve Vaishnavas according to their status. Only an Uttama Vaishnava will consider that it is improper to consider whether one is a Vaishnava, is Kanishtha, Madhyam, or Uttam. If a Madhyam thinks in this way, he'll become an offender, because he actually sees the difference. And if he doesn't worship God, doesn't make the distinction and serve the devotees, then it becomes an offense. Srimad Mahaprabhu indicated this to the residents of Kulaniya Gram, and his instructions are to be revered even more than the Vedas by all Madhyam Vaishnavas. And what are the Vedas of Shruti? They are the orders of Bhagavan. So the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's instructions on behavior, how we should respect Vaishnavas. Now back to the novel. Having said this much, Haridas Babaji became silent for a moment. At this time, Nityananda Das folded his hands and said very gently, "May I ask a question now?" Haridas Babaji replied, "As it pleases you." Haridas Babaji is over 100 years old. So initially, when he interrupted his train of thought, he chastised him. "Don't interrupt. This is very subtle. I'm an old man. I may lose my train of thought. It's not easy." So now he got chastised. He's a Vaishnava. He understands. Now he's more like, "Excuse me, sir. May I speak now?" And he says, "As it pleases you." "Babaji Maharaj, to which category of Vaishnava do you think I belong? Am I a Kanishtha or Madhyam? I am certainly not an Uttama Vaishnava." Haridas Babaji smiled a little and said, "Brother, can one who has received the name Nityananda Das be anything other than an Uttama Vaishnava? My Nittai is very merciful. Even when he is beaten, he gives prema in return. So if one takes his name and becomes his Das, need anything more be said?" It's so sweet, the Vaishnava relation, right? It's such a love talk. Now he's so affectionate to him. And I've seen this in associating with senior Vaishnavas. They love to joke. They love to joke. Even when I would go outside in the realm of other Vaishnavas for different things, and they asked me what my name is, and I'd say, Nanadhara Swami. You see, Prabhupada didn't give the traditional, and right after Prabhupada, they didn't give the traditional sannyas names. Lord Chaitanya also, it's your brahmachari name, plus I thought it was Swami if you weren't married, and Goswami if you were married, something like that. But then later on, we did the more traditional thing. So my sannyas name makes absolutely no sense in the assembly of, you know, like that kind of culture. It doesn't exist. Because my name means holder of the bow. It's a name for Arjuna, the last verse of the Bhagavad Gita. So they would all laugh and they would make this gesture like they were holding a bow and pulling it back. You know? So it's Vaishnavas are very, you know, it's a mixture between philosophy and just loving exchanges. And loving exchanges means joking. Friendship means joking. And they pull the bow and like laugh at me. You know, like I'm like a big, you know, kshatriya, you know, pull the bow. But Nityananda says, I sincerely want to know my actual position. The joking's enough. So Babaji said, then tell me your whole story. If Nittai empowers me to speak, I shall say something. So that's also, it's interesting. I was asking Borijan, you know, within the next few days, I have to decide whether I'm going to come back to New York for 3 weeks in December or not. I have some time there somehow. Anyway, there's things pointing that way. Kasuba wants me to teach the last two sections of his class. And there's a few things. But I'm still trying to figure it out. And I know I have to figure it out kind of soon. So, you know, George Janet always gives practical advice. He said, well, first you have to find out all the information. You know, find out all the factors, what classes you're going to teach, what the situation, you know, and then the answer may come like that. This is, you know, same thing. You want me to tell you, now I need more information, so tell me. So, did you know that on my desk there, there's those little, you know, things like so. So relishable, isn't it, Jaya Dharma? What? This is a lie, right? I'm talking to some people here, right? You sit outside, you know, side of a little Krishna Kanta, hear the, you know. It should be right next to the bed or on the bed. Okay, I got it. That's it. Losing my voice, they're engaging me in so many classes here. But it's so wonderful because bhakti is Krishna Anushilanam. It's engaging yourself in satisfying Krishna in the process of nine devotional services and different types of practices for bhakti. So speaking is a very nice Krishna Anushilanam. Activities that's following Krishna's will. One time I went to see Narayan Maharaj about 25, 30 years ago. Usually he chants in the morning, but he was writing an article. And when I came in, he said, oh, that I've been writing. He said, this is a nice Krishna Anushilanam. I never heard that phrase used in that way. It's a nice Krishna Anushilanam. I'm engaged, I'm absorbed. So speaking about Krishna, it's one of the best Krishna, or hearing about Krishna, it's one of the best Krishna Anushilanams. You know, it's just so nice to absorb. So now Nityananda Das is going to say, tell his family, and you think what the answer will be. What type of Vaishnava is he? He said, I took birth in a low-class family in a village on the bank of the Padmavati River. I was very simple and humble by nature from childhood. I was married at an early age, but I never fell prone to indecency. After some day, my parents died, and my wife and I remained alone in the home. We did not have so much wealth, so we worked every day to maintain ourselves. But after a while, she also left her body. Because of my separation from her, thoughts of detachment awakened in my mind. So that's natural. This is my love. And this was my life. Now, I lost my love. I have no life. I don't want to invoke detachment. And it may be a good detachment, too. I mean, everyone has a different adhikar. It's not, but maybe it really invoked this world is temporary. What's the use of living in it? And so he wanted to be a little renounced. So near my village were many Vaishnavas who had renounced household life. And I saw that the people of Bhagarachi offered them great respect. I hankered for that respect very strongly. And because the temporary feelings of detachment brought on by the death of my wife, I went to Bharagachi and accepted the dress of Vaishnava mendicant. So it was a little bit artificial. Which is why when Raghunath Das Goswami went to Lord Chaitanya and wanted to leave the world, even though he was qualified, he sent him back. Because he didn't want renunciation based on temporary sentiment. And he didn't want renunciation based on the fact, because I'm a loser in the world, therefore I become a sadhu for respect. And you see that in India. People are complete losers. They put on saffron. Now they're Maharaj. And that type of renunciation, you see thousands and thousands of them in India and Vrindavan. And they're respected. They're Maharaj. But actually speaking, it's just because they're losers in the world. So Raghunath Das Goswami went back to show that he was actually, a regular, Lord Chaitanya said, be a regular pounds and shilling man. Show that you can actually be successful in the world. You're not leaving the world simply because, you're not good at it. Leave the world because legitimately you renounce, not because you can't get what you want. He said, but after a few days, my mind became fickle and it was possessed by wicked thoughts and it became very difficult for me to control. But by great fortune, I received the association of an excellent Vaishnava who was pure and simple. So he said, he was just, he took it for the wrong reasons, but somehow, and so many bad thoughts came, but then he met this pure and simple Vaishnava. At present, he's performing his practices in Vrindavan with deep affection. He gave me profound advice, kept me in my association, and purified my mind. So it was so powerful. Now my mind is no longer disturbed by mischievous thoughts. I've developed ruchi for chanting 100,000 names of Harinam every day. I understand that there is no difference between Sri Hari and Nam, that both are very spiritual, fully spiritual. I observe the Ekadasi fast, offer water to Tulsi. When the Vaishnavas perform kirtan, I also join with rapt attention. I drink the water that washes the feet of pure Vaishnavas. I study the Bhakti Shastras every day. I no longer desire to eat palatable food or dress nicely. I have no taste to hear or participate in mundane talks. When I see the Vaishnava's ecstatic moods, a desire comes into my mind to roll on the ground at their feet, and I sometimes do so, but it is out of a desire for prestige. Now, please give me your verdict. To which class of Vaishnava do I belong, and how shall I behave? So he's admitting he still has this desire for prestige, but he's practicing very sincerely, which shows you it's so difficult to get free from that desire for prestige, even at very high platforms. That desire to be respected, which is just a symptom of your desire to control the world, because when you have respect, you have power. And with power, you can have more resources to do whatever you want. Hari Das Vaishnav looked at Hari Das Babaji looked at Vaishnav Babaji with a smile and said, "Tell us, to which class of Vaishnava Nityananda Das belongs?" Vaishnav Das, from what I have heard, he has surpassed the Kanishna stage and has entered the Madhyam stage. Babaji, that is my feeling also. Nityananda Das, how wonderful! Today I've come to know of my true position from the mouths of Vaishnavas. Please bestow your mercy upon me so that I may gradually come to the stage of Uttama Vaishnava. Vaishnav Das, at the time that you accepted mendicancy, there was a desire for honor and prestige in your heart. So you were not actually qualified to enter the renounced order. But the worst thing is to have a desire for prestige and honor in your heart and then get a respectable position. And I think there's one book I brought with me, I'm not sure. It's called The Ladder of Divine Descent. You ever read that book? It's 32 qualities of the monks that lived in the desert monks. They would leave the monasteries and just go out and live in the desert and just pray to Jesus all day. And he discussed all the qualities. You know, have to get rid of prestige. And he described that there were some people that were in the monasteries that were considered very, very advanced. And then they went out and they became the desert monks. And then they left. And he said, because when they were in the monastery, they were fed the manure of false prestige. In other words, their practices were fed by their false prestige, the honor they were getting as being the topmost chanter, the chanter of 64 rounds, the Babaji, and they were fed in that way. And then when they went outside and they didn't have that food of false prestige, there was no reason for them to practice anymore. And we see this happen even in Vrindavan, in Radha Kund. I've seen people, they're like flying high. But, after a while, when there's really no, because they have this position of advanced devotee, and, it's just such a subtle thing. I'm better than others. Then it goes. Nityananda Das, even now I have some desire for honor. I think I may attract others and win tremendous respect if I am seen weeping profusely and displaying ecstatic emotion. Babaji, you must endeavor to give this up, otherwise there is a serious danger that your bhakti will be eroded and you will have to descend to the Kanishna platform again. This desire for fame is most pernicious to the Vaishnavas. And it does not easily agree to leave the sadhakas. Forever, a single drop of genuine spiritual emotion is far superior to an imitative display of emotion. Pradyumna, in the Bhakti Center. Told you, he once saw this, video and of some Vaishnava, dancing, in ecstasy, displaying ecstatic emotion. And he was concerned. Because he said, we have to be careful of sahajiism. And the word comes from sahaja, to be easily born. And I was talking about this yesterday. If a lady wants a child, and after 1 month she comes with a child and said, this is my baby. You say, no, a child is not easily born after 1 month. You stole this in the hospital from some poor couple. You stole that baby. It's not so cheap. You have to be pregnant. You have to go through 9 months. So when emotions are displayed, too easily, that's sahaja. And Pradyumna said there can be sahaja kata, there can be sahaja kirtan, there can be, it can enter, and it, because of that desire for prestige, so it can enter. And then he was saying that, in his experience with senior Vaishnavas, it's a very sober. Emotions are not expressed so easily. And he suggested too, with when you have kirtans, there has to be a little kata to keep it in perspective. He said that was his experience with Prabhupada. There's always some kata to give the tattva, to give the focus. I'll just finish the paragraph. Please give me your mercy, said Nityananda Das, and reverentially placed the dust from Haridas Babaji's feet on his head. At this, Babaji became unsettled. He quickly got up, embraced Nityananda Das, seated him by his side, and patted him on the back. How extraordinary is the effect of touching a Vaishnava! Tears immediately began to stream from Nityananda Das's eyes, and Haridas Babaji could not check his own tears, although he tried to do so. A wonderful atmosphere was manifest, and tears came to the eyes of all assembled Vaishnavas. At that moment, Nityananda Das accepted Sri Haridas in his heart as his guru, and his life became successful. Within a short time, his emotions subsided, and he inquired, What are the primary and secondary characteristics of Kanishtha Bhakta in regard to Bhakti? Okay. Hi, Bo. Anyone like to ask any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
One second, Gail.
So, Gail?
Yes.
Hi, Krishna, Gail.
Say again?
Hello?
Yes, yeah. I hear you.
Okay.
Should I ask?
Ask your question.
Okay. I don't know how many I can get, but I have at least two.
Okay.
Okay, I was actually hoping that I wouldn't have to pursue this particular subject, but I have to anyway. You were saying that it seems as though Shukadeva Goswami was not being an Uttama Adhikari by his denouncement of Kamsa, but actually that denouncement was his love, an expression of his love for Krishna. But an Uttama Adhikari, we also hear, feels that everyone is loving Krishna. So I'm wondering, although his denouncement of Kamsa was a symptom of his love for Krishna, how did Shukadev see Kamsa as loving Krishna?
Okay. Let me go back to that part if I can find it. It said, other moods arise from time to time according to different circumstances, but they are all transformations of that frame. So it said, even in Uttama Adhikari, because it's natural out of intense love. Okay, I see what your question is. I'm just repeating what's here. They say out of intense love, you know, you're seeing, and I'm saying you're seeing through that lens of love. But there are certain circumstances, even if you're seeing from that circumstance of love, when someone blasphemies a Vaishnava, it's I guess he's responding in a very strong way. So I guess your question means, is he coming down to the platform of Madhya?
I don't know that that's my question. My question is, how is...
Then that's the answer. Then the answer is, if I would have been there and asked the question further, then I think maybe the answer would have been, okay, yes, even in Uttama Adhikari, he's in that lens. It says that an Uttama Bhagavat can come down to the platform of Bhajan. He's so much fixed on that platform of seeing everyone as loving Krishna. But when he hears somehow or other that direct blasphemy of Krishna, as was the example here, that he's actually hearing, he's not there, he's telling the story. So he's actually absorbed in telling the story, and he's getting into the mood of the story. And in the mood of the story, Kamsa is going to kill Krishna. So maybe then he has to come down to the platform of discrimination. That maybe that's what it's saying. Even someone with Uttama Bhagavat, maybe that's the example. That sometimes, even out of love, you have to come down to the platform of discrimination. So I don't think that the sense of an Uttama Bhagavat is that it's one way of them looking at the world, and they're mostly on that platform of looking at the world. But sometimes they have to come down or up to the platform of discrimination to service. And I guess one of them is to preach, and maybe the other one is when someone actually speaks and says something, and maybe the other one is when they're reading scripture, and there's so much in the bhav of the love of Krishna, and then they're reading the story where Kamsa is actually trying to kill Krishna. So out of that love, he's saying it. Okay, Gail?
Yeah. Can I... I forgot what my other question was. Yes. Can I ask my other question?
Yes, Gail. I'm in an exceptionally merciful mood being in Vrindavan. And also, it's now the class is in the morning, and it's not after I went out all day preaching, and I'm walking... giving the class, just trying to stay up. I'm in Vrindavan in the morning. Good.
Okay. Yeah, I would encourage you to stay there if it were not for my own sake. So I won't say that. But other question is this: the Kanishtha Adhikari who can only see Krishna or the deity in the temple. So, like in your response to my letter, you said that, you know, we cannot actually, with our contaminated consciousness, we cannot actually even see the deity properly. We only see marble and metal and wood or whatever. And so, when you say that the Kanishtha Adhikari can see the deity only in the temple, What does that mean for the Kanishka? I mean, because I thought that even the Kanishka can only see metal and marble only.
It's a mixture. He's seeing Krishna. He knows Krishna is there, just like someone sees the mailbox, and he knows it's authorized by the government, so he's seeing the government. He knows it's different from an ordinary. And he develops some love. Yes, he's seeing Krishna. Yes, there's Krishna.
Okay.
But I'm just saying, if you analyze it, is he really actually, you know, fully seeing Krishna? It's just like we chant the holy name. Are they just syllables? Are they a Krishna? It depends on our faith. It depends on our consciousness. So, yes, we're seeing Krishna in the form of the holy name. We're hearing Krishna in the form of the holy name. But there's degrees of it.
And when Krishna manifests himself in the Uttama Adhikari, it's really, you know, the Kanishka, or I would say only another, maybe Majjhima or another Uttama Adhikari can perceive that Krishna has manifest himself in such a qualified person, right? Because that's just like trying to see the deity.
When people can no longer respect that or see that, you know, and get mental about it, then there needs to be a more pronounced manifestation of Krishna in the deity.
Yeah, okay.
You know? Yeah. Okay, thank you, Gail.
Thank you also very much.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello? Because I have to head out, but we got a few more minutes.
Hare Krishna, Guru Maharaj, this is Vrajaraja.
Hare Krishna. Greetings from Vrindavan to your whole family.
Thank you, Maharaj.
You have such nice children. They became devotees. How wonderful. Anybody else like to say hello? There's always a problem with muting the phones. It's just technical, and some people can't figure it out, and they write me letters. Okay, we're going. Hare Krishna, bunch of help with your Vishakapa Sindhu Baby Chat, let me put on top of you.